The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Listening to the newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast, presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm your host, Charlie Smith. You can find me on Twitter/X at Smith_MLB. My co-host for this one is Jeremy Schilling at JTSchill20. For those that are watching right now, John Henry Hates Puppies is his little subject underneath his name. If you want more Bastards of Boston Baseball content, check out bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. Before we get into it, Jeremy, I used to love doing the temperature check thing with you, so we're going to bring it back. What is your temperature check on the Boston Red Sox right now?
1.9. It's to the point now where winning the series is actually harmful. I believe that this team should sell. There are pieces to move. And when you win a series like we did against a good baseball team in the Cleveland Guardians, it continues to delude Breslow that one, he can get back in it, get the team back in it, and save his job, because that's not what's happening here. And we'll dive into this game, but there are things that happen in this game that are an indication that it's not going to get better despite winning a series.
It's so interesting that you say that. You're actually losing by winning. What really is happening right now is the acronym FEAR, which is false expectations appearing real. You think you're actually going in one direction, but you're really not, right? So, Jeremy, to your point, I think you're absolutely correct. And this sucks to say, because this reminds me of a couple years ago when we were able to make the playoffs with a whatever team and the roster was not constructed properly. And it gave the ownership and it gave this team's ownership and the body deciding what should be done a false sense of reality that this was actually headed in the right direction when we really weren't quite there yet. So my temperature check, it's not as low as yours, but I will say it's hilarious that, you know, I think we thought this was really going to be the only game we won, and we found ways to almost lose this game. It was incredible. So without name dropping, because we're going to get into it in a couple of moments here, clearly a lot to talk about in this game. Whether you watched it, listened to it, it was really hard to not feel like you were going to pull your hair out five or six times, multiple innings, multiple situations. It wasn't just one team or the other team having a bad day. Even the umpire was having a really bad day or a really bad inning in this case. But why don't you take it away?
Yeah, one last thing about the open is part of my 1.9 is in the last 48 hours, Crochet and Anthony have been shut down.
Brutal.
So they canceled Crochet's live bullpen session as he's got a lat strain, and Anthony, I think they're shutting down. That happened. I believe I've been away at my daughter's lacrosse tournament, so I think that was Saturday, but my days are kind of jambled. Whoa, what just happened?
All good. But, I hope your daughter won in her lacrosse game.
She played well. We'll get into it, Charlie.
All right, cool. Take it away.
Ranger Suarez is the topic here. He's 5 innings pitched, 8 hits, 4 earned runs, 2 walks, 10 Ks. The 4 earned runs are really deceptive because a ball is hit in the air, and I listened to this game on the radio, and 7 seconds this ball hung in the air, and Yoshida never found it, and it dropped behind him, and Ramirez had a double that, under no circumstances a double, but that's the way the rules are. It's not an error because he didn't get a glove on it, and Suarez, who would have got out of the inning on that, winds up giving up, I think, 2 additional runs. And Suarez, based on the call of the game, you know, was looking out into the stands, and you could see he was clearly frustrated, which I found pretty surprising because he's pretty even keeled. kind of just next pitch guy. And based on the description in the radio, he kind of lost it a little bit, not outwardly, but, you know, looked frustrated. And then Mickey Gasper drops a ball at first base. So two, like, little league plays. And I'm going to talk more about that in a minute. But Suarez gives you a start that you need to win the series against, again, a good team. He was under some pressure, but made pitches when he had to and found a way to get it to the bullpen with a chance to win the game. And then they ultimately score some runs and win the game. So it's a good result. And I don't worry about Suarez as part of the general operation here, but I'll let you talk Suarez and then maybe I'll talk about the effect of some of the roster decisions on what happened today.
Yeah, so that situation was really unfortunate because we all know that Masataka Yoshida is not the best fielder in the outfield. But what was frustrating about it was that he wasn't close. He was really far off where that ball was. Now, I think just based on where the balls were, you know, what was hit, where, how, I still think the Guardians would have scored two runs. It just would have happened in a different manner. Because you're right, it's a double. It's the shortest hit double in Jose Ramirez's career. And he's also part of the reason why they lost this game, and I'll get into that later on. But he hits a double. They lose the ball. You know, Yoshida loses the ball in left field, has to backtrack and go get the ball. Chase DeLauder has a single, knocks him in. Now you're losing 4-3. There's another double later on. Then there's a walk. You got the bases loaded with only one out. And then I think it was Manzardo who got hit by a pitch earlier in the game. Really soft hit batsman, but whatever. Still hit, allegedly. He strikes him out, and then he strikes out Stuart Fairchild. He goes into complete beast mode. I don't know if anybody in our rotation would have been able to do that outside of Garrett Crochet. And that might have been last year, Garrett Crochet. I don't know about this year, Garrett Crochet. He absolutely shoved in that inning. Literally pantsed Cleveland, and that was it. Like, if there was like a changing moment in this game, that's one of the two. Because we're going to get into the second one in a little bit. But Ranger Suarez is the true only pitcher in this rotation that I don't care how many are on. I don't care how many are out. I trust him that if I need to get a strikeout or a double play ball, he's going to get the job done. This is a guy who has a couple things to play for here. He's not viewed as the one on this team, but Ranger Suarez, he comes in with a sinker-cutter mix. He's throwing that four-seam about 20% of the time, but that curveball is absolutely lethal. And when that pitch was coming low and in, I mean, it didn't matter where it was. He was getting people to swing at pitches that hit the dirt first. It was absolute masterclass with one out, bases packed, gets both strikeouts because he absolutely needed to. Also, big bonus for Ranger Suarez, not looking at Yoshida being like, dude, how did you do that? Like, we can't afford to make these mistakes. And was able to get out of the inning. But please, go ahead.
I think he throws the sixth inning if that ball is caught by Yoshida. But one of the things that dawned on me, and we've talked about this topic, but roster construction, is Rafael is scratched with low back tightness. And Wilson Contreras is getting a day off because his hand wrist injury is lingering and he needs a blow. And you essentially put two guys in the lineup, at least defensively, because Mickey's hitting and he carries his own. I don't think he's a 4A defensive catcher, but he's hitting. You put a catcher at first base and a guy who should never see the field in left field. And they make plays in this game that you frankly don't see on other teams when there's a backup or a fourth outfielder or a utility man that's got to play a different position. It's just staggering how thin this whole thing is. And by the way, they're not good. It's not like they're good. They're 8 games below .500. They're one of the worst teams in baseball. But this is one of the reasons why I don't think they have a chance to pull out of it, is there's no depth. There's no depth. And sure, we're going to talk about how they hit late in this game. But that to me, you know, you could just look at like the mistake itself and fine, that's fair. I think it cut Suarez's outing an inning short as a result of the drop fly ball, but you don't have people when Rafael comes up with tightness to put out there to make routine plays. Contreras has to play first base. Personally, I would have put Sogard at first, but I get why you want to get Mickey's bat in the lineup. But it's just it's one of the reasons why winning this series is bad for the Boston Red Sox.
One other thing about Ranger Suarez and Tanner Bibee that they were talking about earlier today, they showed a graphic with the lowest average run support in Major League Baseball. Tanner Bibee is averaging 1.43 runs a game of support. Ranger Suarez, 2.52. There is no other starting pitcher higher than those two. They receive the two lowest amounts of support. The next closest guy is Tyler Mahle in San Francisco. Then you got Seth Lugo out there. Then you got Ryan Weathers. Literally, Ryan Weathers receives twice the support that Tanner Bibee does. It's actually kind of incredible when you think about it, because Bibee was winless. I think he was 0-7 coming into today. And I thought, okay, well, Ziari kind of sucks. That's justifiable. But 1.43 runs, that's insane. That's absolutely mental. Anything else you want to add about Ranger?
No. No.
All right. Well, I want to
say though, wild that Bibee's on a very good team and hasn't won a game. Like,
he's having a rough year.
This is his 13th start, and, you know, but just an anecdote.
Yeah, no, I want to shift it over into poor decisions and just absolute incredible, like, chaos with ABS. The home plate umpire had probably one of the single worst innings since Angel Hernandez at first base between the Red Sox and Yankees. There were three successful challenges by the Red Sox. One failed. The Guardians went 0-2. And one of them was the second strikeout, Fairchild, against Ranger Suarez, tapped his helmet on a 3-2, I believe, and ended up clipping the corner with the bases loaded, two outs, and we got out of the inning. The other one, which ended up proving very, very costly, was Jose Ramirez, who actually challenged the strike pitch, tapped his helmet, and Cleveland, just like that, now no more challenges. Why was that really, really important? Well, for those that watched the game or listened to the game, Willy Abreu looked at strike three, which was called a ball. Cleveland could not challenge that pitch. Why? They blew it. They blew this game. How does that change this game? Well, Willy Abreu, bases loaded, full count, goes looking at strike three. The inning is over. There's no heroics. There's no excitement. There's nothing else to it. That's it. But I don't remember the last time that the Red Sox literally challenged that many times. But you also think about it. The Boston Red Sox have a lot of people that should have really good vision of that plate. Connor Wong is a catcher. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is a former catcher. Carlos Narvaez is a catcher. Mickey Gasper, didn't he have some experience also being a catcher too? Right? We don't use him every day. You got four catchers in your lineup there. That's pretty wild when you think about it. 3-for-4 on ABS challenges. I'll take it. Cleveland 0-for-2. I am shocked that we won the challenge the way that we did. But when you look at it, I thought Willy Abreu had a shot. Against lefties, hitting over 400. He only has a home run against one home run against lefties. Has five against righties, but he's hitting just barely. He's 220, something like that. So we got really, really lucky. Yoshida was able to make up for that mistake. Got a two-run single with a typical Yoshida hit, just barely out of reach from, I believe, the second baseman. I think it was Bazzana playing second there. So we got really, really lucky again. And it wasn't us, you know, making the right decision, because earlier in the game, Willy Abreu tried stretching a single into a double, and Jose Ramirez, with incredible, like, field IQ, fires a bullet to second base. Willy Abreu is out. The inning is over. Why does that suck? You would have had two outs, Willier at first, Jaron Duran at third, one of the faster guys on your team. If the next guy gets a single, he's in. You score another run. Now, hindsight 2020, the Red Sox are still taking chances. Willy Abreu, not one of the guys on your team that should be stretching a single to a double. I just don't get why we're not being smart about it. There's two outs, so you don't have to worry about running into a double play. There's just the mental mistakes have got to stop, because we won this game because Cleveland lost it. They made a mistake which allowed us to get back into the game. We gave them plenty of opportunities to blow us out.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first game all year that I can remember that we won the challenge part of the game, strategy part of the game. I mean, we are terrible at it. I mean, earlier, like 2 weeks ago, Montesario challenged a strike call, and the ball was not on the corner. It was completely within the strike zone. Rafaela is absolutely terrible at it, and he seems to be emotional when he makes the decision to challenge. So I don't know what happened today. There's no explanation for it, but obviously the Abreu at bat would have been a different result, and as you said, the inning would have been over. So I have no understanding why they are this bad. And you mentioned that there's catchers in the lineup that should have a good understanding of the strike zone. To that, I would say when you're receiving a ball stationary, square to the pitcher, it's a different understanding than when you're hitting. But they're also terrible at it behind the plate. You know, just terrible. And other than Roman Anthony, I think on opening day, late in that game, challenging a strike call, there haven't been any impact overturns until today. So, I mean, it's a symptom of their approach at the plate, which is terrible. And it's one of the reasons why they're so bad offensively generally, but why they're so bad with runners in scoring position, why they're so bad with situational hitting. It all stems from the same failure up and down this lineup. So shocking that it happened the way it did today, frankly, but glad it did, I guess. I mean, again, my position on today's win is it's bad for the Red Sox, but if you're one of the people that are rooting for this team to get back in it still and think that's what's best for the Red Sox, you know, with the way they scored late and finally kind of won a game I didn't think they were going to win, maybe this is the turnaround point if you believe that's possible. I don't either.
Couple other things too. I forgot, actually. We had five because Contreras, former catcher, ended up coming in as a fielding replacement at first base. Was irrelevant with challenges and whatnot. But I mean, I don't remember a time where we actually had five current or past catchers all in the lineup or playing in the same game. But the offensive comparison that they were also talking about for the Boston Red Sox, they're better than 500 on the road. They are less than 333 at home. We don't hit home runs at home. We've hit 9 more home runs away. We score 1.4 more runs per game away than at home. Our average with runners in scoring position was like 275. And then at home, it's under 200. So we're taking the bat out of our own hands more regularly at home, whether you're pressing, you're doing something, I don't know. But to have won almost twice as many games at home is pretty wild when you think about it, because winning today, we're now 16-14 at home. We're 9-19 away. So two games variance right there. The other thing I think I want to talk about on this one is, you know, what's it going to take for this team to realize, and we've talked about this a couple other points before, you know, the offense will run when Jarren Duran is absolutely going off. On the last show that I did with Matt and Juan, there was some discussion about Jarren Duran, like, you know, trying to move him and get his value up and whatnot. Jarren Duran's value is right back up there again. He's had, what, 8 or 9 home runs in the month of May. I still do not want to move him, because I think that if you don't have a path to having a consistent squad, or I think an identity without losing one of your faces, or you know, if you try to get rid of another one of your faces, backfired with Devers, backfired with Bregman, however you felt about either one of them, this guy wasn't even pitched to in one, maybe two of the at-bats. They just threw 4 balls at him. They don't want to face Jarren Duran. He's that hot right now. Jaren Duran is a terror on the base pass too. Guys got wheels and they tested him at first. They threw over because they didn't want to get embarrassed. I'm curious to know what this lineup would look like or what the identity of this team would look like if somebody like that isn't there. I think this team does lack an identity, and it would only get worse if Jaren wasn't there. The guy's a star for this team. Whatever you want to say about him, you know, he's still the one getting the game started. Started the game off with another home run. Ended yesterday with a home run. What else do people need from Jaren Duran?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what bucket you're sitting in. If you're sitting in, they can get back in this because the AL is so bad and you're only like three games out of the wild card, then you keep Duran and, you know, he's the battery for the offense. And I said that right before the season or after the first one I was on once the season started. Like, this offense goes when he goes. When he goes bad, I didn't think it would be this bad, but it's really bad. When he doesn't hit, they're not going to score. You know, with Anthony out, Contreras is dinged. They're not hitting home runs, although recently they have hit a few, but he is. And look, he can affect a game without really, you know, hitting for power. Now, he is hitting for power, and that's a bonus. And to start the game off with a home run, I mean, obviously that's an ideal situation, but he puts pressure on the defense. If he's not striking out, he's putting the ball in play, the middle infielders have to rush, third basemen have to rush, and if they bobble, take an extra timing step, he is fast enough to turn it into a base hit or an error. Base hits in the gap that don't get all the way in the gap, he's pretty good at making the decision to, you know, press and go to second and turn that thing into a double. So all of those things are now starting to happen again now that he's getting hot. And I don't think he's going to be traded because Breslow needs this team to turn it around to keep his job. And I think Breslow is either lying to himself or believes that this team can, in fact, get back in it. So I don't think he will be traded. Now, as I said at the outset of the podcast, I think winning today is bad for the Red Sox. I think Breslow should be fired. I think they need to sell all expiring contracts. And a guy like Contreras, who's got another year, and I think Chapman has a vesting year, but you get my point. Your veteran assets should be sold off, and but they have to rebuild. They're that bad. And Duran has value. Especially now that he's starting to hit for power. So it looks like Roman can't play left with the throw, but, you know, whether you expect him to be the left fielder next year or somebody else, like, he's the guy that's got a year of arbitration or two left, still has some of that 2023 lingering around his value. And I do think that you could get multiple prospects big league arm, maybe a bullpen arm with prospects, and rebuild faster than by hanging on to him. But I think what happened this offseason is a microcosm of what's going to happen. I think that they should have traded him in the offseason. They didn't. Ill-conceived plan, terrible roster construction. And the roster construction issues resolved itself because Anthony's hurt. But so Duran's going to play left field every day. But it's not going to help the fact that this team's going to have to reset. And even if they lie to themselves and continue to, or even become a buyer, once they get to the offseason, once they get a new general manager, a chief baseball operator, Duran's got to go to go back to young and unfortunately prospects and building.
It hurts to hear that. I mean, I struggle to be down with it. I get what you're saying, but I will agree with you that while the Red Sox are doing, you know, they took the series against Cleveland, they do business taking this series. Cleveland was the hottest team in the AL Central. Like, we were lucky if we took one out of three.
It makes no sense.
We were lucky. It doesn't make any sense. Like, Juan jokingly in her war room said, you know, I'm just going to pick against the Red Sox because they just, you know, they must listen to what I say because now they're winning when I say they're going to lose. And that's everybody, right? The Red Sox are winning games despite the odds against them. Let's shift it over into the late inning heroic / offense. We were able to reap benefits because of an oops, no more ABS challenge. Because of that, we were able to do some damage. Why don't you take us away with that?
Yeah, I mean, they did something they haven't done all year, which is they hit with two outs and runners in scoring position. And they really piled it on. They did it against three separate arms in that inning. Cleveland's got a good bullpen. All in the game, they scored 12 runs. That seventh, Abreu, as you mentioned, but Yoshida singled, Kiner Falefa singled, and Duran tripled. So they really poured it on late and went into that inning down a run, which they haven't really done all year. So for the people that think that this team can get back in it, this is something we need to see more often.
Right.
The problem has been really absent today. These innings have not happened all year. And it's not for lack of opportunities. You know, in the last 2 weeks, they've had a couple of ninth innings where they down by a run, two on, you know, and they just can't get the big hit. And today they got it more than one time. But I don't think what happened today, this afternoon, is something that's going to be repeatable with this offense. So, you know, it's nice to see if they start to do it more often, you might see my temperature go up and you might see me switch back into win now mode. But today's result was excellent. I just don't see it happening consistently.
Yeah. So when Durbin hit that triple down the line, that again, these are all extra hits. These are all bonus at bats. Yoshida single driving in two. Kiner Falefa knocking in Abreu right after that. Durbin knocking in both Yoshida and Kiner Falefa. Those five runs are all a result of a poorly timed ABS challenge. Now, who knows what happens in the next inning? But you know what? You don't know who comes out of that bullpen. Cleveland has a decent bullpen. We have, I forget who it was that called, you know, Weissert and a couple other guys like the Arsonists or whatever. I can't remember who it was. But I'm nervous when I see certain guys in our bullpen warming up. I'm like, here we go again. Here we go again to throw this game away. Or throw it away with, like, conviction, right? That wasn't Cleveland throwing this game away. That was them making their pitches, and unfortunately, it just didn't go their way. That umpire behind home plate had a really rough couple of innings. And you could argue, you know, if you're Stephen Vogt, like, yeah, we didn't lose this game. The umpires blew it, and that was it. You could take that approach if you want, but there were other at-bats in that inning you just were not able to get outs from. Connor Wong drawing a walk. Carlos Narvaez getting a single, moving him up 90 feet. You're not even challenging Jaron Duran, which I don't blame you because it is Jaron Duran. You're able to get Gasper to strike out looking. He struck out three times today. Sometimes I'm curious why he's batting in the two hole, but then he has like a three hit game and we're like, where is this coming from, right? The late inning heroics for the Boston Red Sox, do we need to see more of it? Absolutely. Do we need to see more of it without the other team making a mistake? Yes, because that's how, we're going to be taken seriously. Right now, people still kind of think that we're a little bit of a joke, and I don't blame them because we are. Every time we win, to your point, it's kind of negatively, what's the word I'm looking for? Every time we win, it's negatively impacting our team for the long run here. I don't think, you know, if someone were to say, oh, you're only X amount of games or X and a half games away from a wild card spot, the fear word comes in. False expectations appearing real. You do not have a legitimate team put together that can compete in the postseason. A lot of people will say, well, you know, all you have to do is get there, then you figure it out. Some people will say that. Well, you know what? If you're figuring it out for the postseason, you probably shouldn't be there. Because you should have an action plan. We don't have one. We were able to reap the benefits today because Cleveland blew it. That's it. So we can't expect 100 teams or 100 games to go our way because the other team blows it. It would really help sometimes if we miss their ace. That would be awesome. We've been really running into the 1-2-3 or the 2-3-4 in people's rotations, and we're not missing anyone of, you know, we're not missing their ace. We're seeing the ace in our set. So it's unlucky. the way the schedule is just the way the schedule is. That's it. You can't do anything about that. But man, oh man, I mean, it was refreshing to see this because you've seen it once. Now you know they can do it. The question is, can they do it again? I don't know.
No, they will not. They will not. And look, they got a chance here. The Orioles aren't great. Got to obviously avoid the long ball with the pitching staff, but they got Yankees Rays coming in. So again, to the crowd that thinks that because the AL's bad that they can get back into it, they got to go win another series and then find a way to play 500 baseball against the Rays and Yankees, which I don't think they can do. At the same time, we find out that Crochet and Anthony are not close, and who knows what's going on with Rafael's back, if that's truly he just got tight. Or that's something that's going to be a problem. And Contreras, you know,
let me ask you straight up, over under 2.5 wins in that 9-game set.
No, they'll win 3. I'll take the over, but you know, it's these sorts of stretches that can force, you know, things. If they go 2-8 or, you know, it goes real bad, and now you're 12 games under 500, and some of these other teams in the league start winning. I mean, obviously, the podcast getting what they want and firing Breslow and selling and resetting is going to take place. So, you know, I mean, there's still 100 something games left. Remember, Cleveland won the AL Central last year, being down 14 games in late August. So
that was an insane run. That was absolutely insane.
It's a much worse division than what we're in because the Rays are very good and the Yankees are very good. So you're not going to go back and win the division.
You got Toronto too.
You know, Toronto's on the schedule. The Yankees are on the schedule this month twice. So, you know, they got to figure it out offensively. I don't think they will. And I think they'll delay selling potentially, and this sounds terrible, let Breslow do it.
It hurts to hear you say that, because if that happens, we've literally learned nothing, and you're going to be wasting all the good years of some of the players that we have. Anything else you want to add before we get into this upcoming series?
No.
All right, so let's hit this. So no baseball tomorrow. Baltimore at home we're at home versus Baltimore for 3 games. You got Conley Early against Shane Baz, Peyton Tolley, Butch Tolley is going up against Chris Bassett, and then Brian Bayo is going up against Trevor Rogers, who's been really struggling this year, but they might give Bayo the start with no opener again. He's the best long reliever in Major League Baseball. But that's not a fun statistic or fun title to have, you know, not if you're getting paid the amount of money you're getting paid. How do you have this one shaping out?
I mean, the Baltimore's three. So Shane Baz has a 4.48. Bassett is 5.06, and the guy that's pitching against Bayo is over 6. His ERA is actually worse than Brian Bayo's, which seems unfathomable, but it is. I mean, the pitching lines up. You probably should win the series. I doubt they do. They probably won't hit, regardless of what they've done so far this season and what their ERAs and WHIP dictate. But I will say this about Bayo. The fact that they even have to go back to Bayo is such an indictment on the bullpen, because they're not going back to Bayo because they think he's figured it out, okay? Because he's really only figured it out when the pressure's off and he can start in the second inning. The reason why they're going to Bayo is because they can't find anybody to actually open the game. Sam Inyega gets absolutely roasted in this series, and it's 4-0 before, and Bayo's facing the top of the lineup. They bat around. The leadoff hitter's coming up in the second to face Brian Bayo, and now he pitched well, and he finished the game. But, I mean, that whole situation's a disaster. So if you think Bayo's going to come out and pitch the way he's been pitching as a relief pitcher, I don't know what you're seeing, because this guy can't mentally get right to start the game.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing. I mean, I was talking about this on the last show about how if you want to see a weird statistic, look up Yu Darvish's ERA versus the first batter of any game. It's the worst single ERA for a starting pitcher versus the first batter in Major League Baseball history. I don't think there's anybody with a worse ERA. That's crazy. Brian Bello, elite coming out of the pen. It's not why we have you. We have you in the rotation. You need to figure it out. And I don't care what you need to do. You need to figure it out in this start. You really do. We need to have all three starters go six innings because I don't want to see this bullpen coming out for the sixth and seventh and eighth and ninth for four straight games. I just don't. I don't want to see it. And maybe we get lucky with one of those games where we have a starter go six plus and we only need one, maybe two relievers, and we lose that game so we don't have to pitch the ninth inning. Or actually, no, excuse me. We're at home. Doesn't matter. We're going to be pitching 29 innings no matter what. Forget that. I don't know, man.
Who wins? Who wins the series?
We shouldn't win the series, right? Our offense is not as good.
But what's going to happen? What's your prediction?
I think it's going to come down to game three. I think we're going to take one. We're going to lose two, possibly. I think we win game one. I don't know if we win game two. I think that Conley early has been a little bit more consistent than Butch Tolley. I just think that Tolley doesn't trust certain pitches that he has in his makeup. And because of that, they're going to be just waiting fastball and it's going to be a difference maker for them. So I think we win game one, we lose game two, and game three, it's a toss-up, man. I mean, it'd be great to see Bello win one because he's just been not getting it done. I don't know. I'm sure you have Baltimore winning two out of three.
Orioles win the series.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand why people would say that because this team doesn't show us that they're capable of taking a series with intent. That's the major thing, with intent. We were able to take the series against Cleveland. You're able to drop nine runs in back-to-back games, but you did it with a handicap. You know, you were able to score runs because of mistakes that were made or issues that were out of your control that worked in your favor. Anything else you want to add?
Sell the team.
I believe you wanted to say, go Red Sox, Jeremy. Was that what you meant to say?
No.
No? Okay. All right. Well, sell the team from one of our favorite people on the planet, Jeremy Schilling. That's going to do it for your Bastards of Boston Baseball with your newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast. Once more, if you are looking for some fun content, bastardsofbostonbaseball.com is where you